This is Nursing in America. Each week we speak with incredible Filipino nurses who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream. This is the second part of a two-part episode, so make sure you go back and listen to part one first.
I speak to nurses from all over the world coming to the US. Some have waited for many years to get here. And I'm thinking particularly of a nurse that I spoke to last week. Her name was Julie. She'd waited for 10 years. She had a previous priority date. She got here and she said she's been here for a few months. And she said the organization that she's gone to is, you know, has been really good and helpful and supportive, but she's just miserable and she feels homesick. And she just feels, you know, really down and depressed. Did you ever have days when you felt like that?
I do. I well, did have those times. Yeah. There are times.
Oh, go ahead, then. Like, go ahead.
Tell
us about it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there are times. So when I came here, I didn't know how to drive. I have no friends. I have this tendency that I kind of want to copy the American way to belong to them. But it was not, I don't think it was a good way to do that. What I did in your committee, I'm very sure there are Filipino organizations, Filipino community. There should be like Philippine Nurses Association in the state that you are in somehow. I get connected. I research group of Filipinos, like organizations. I reach out to them and then I met people, Filipino that I became friends with. It was also helpful for me to watch shows, Filipino shows in YouTube or anything like something like that. Connect with your friends. We do have organizations around in the community where I am right now. I participate to them. I go to their Christmas party. I go to birthdays. Even if I don't know who is having a birthday, but that's the way you connect. That's the way you get friends. So, yeah.
So don't isolate is what you say.
No.
Yeah. Because I think that's sometimes the worst thing that people can do is they feel like they're the only ones who are feeling like that. In fact, everybody feels like that at some stage or another. Did you have days like that, John?
Well, that's inevitable, you know, coming from from the comfort of your home, being here, even though I brought my family with me, my wife and my boy, we felt like the same. We were homesick. We were I think we're on the edge of being depressed, if I may say, because we came here winter time, where there like short amount of daylight, and you don't get to see that amount of sunlight that you get to have back home. So it's kind of like really, if I may say, depressing, because when we study in nursing school, the SAD, it's seasonal affective disorder. It's true. we experience that, you know, by not having enough sunlight, shining to us. It's kind of like difficult to have that. And then imagine the time difference. Because I think where I am at right now, Missouri, we're 13 hours behind from home. So imagine the adjustment of your body to that the time zone. It's kind of like it messed up really your system. Mm-hmm. So homesickness, being depressed, I will say it's not normal, but it's expected. But I just love what Lanny said, that build friends, build community, because that's the only way for you to have a great solution for that. Life here in the US is not just work home. Well, we need to build a life outside work, mm-hmm. and that is, right. Building a great community, hanging out with friends, who can help you to be better, to be a better person, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think isolating is the biggest problem, or feeling embarrassed or ashamed that you sometimes people have waited so long to come to America and they get here and those first few months, and it's not to say everybody comes here and is depressed the whole time, but it is common to have days or periods of time in the beginning when you feel homesick and you know, you might be feeling a bit down. And not everybody has that, but it, you know, it can happen. But I think the worst thing is really to isolate. So I think really good advice from there. We've got a comment here from Alyssa who's saying, he said 5,000 is enough, but if you have more, bring it, since you can always use it for setting up your home, deposit for a car, etc. So good advice, Alyssa. Thank you for that. Abigail is asking, in this time that all the visa bulletins are current, how long will it take for the nurses dreaming to be working there? So Abigail, listen on Friday, because we have the Friday Facebook Live with the lawyers, and I will ask that question for you. And the good news is that there has never been a better time to come to America than now. So if you have not yet passed your NCLEX or you're still working on your IELTS, please get that done, because there's never been a better time in terms of the visa bulletin. Shalani is saying, if you are uncomfortable of your work, will it affect your evaluation or appraisal as an orientee?
I don't think so. It's probably different per organization, but in the organization I work with, no, it's not. The most thing when I do my evaluation with the staff attendance, that's the big thing. And I'm not sure with the hospital, but I work in a rehab facility. So every year when we do our appraisal, those are most of the people that you work with. What did you have a lot of complaints from your residents, from the person you work with? It's not because you are asking questions, you didn't know how to do the procedure. No, that's not how we do, at least in our organization.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty common. John, any comment on that?
Yeah, I agree to what Lanny said. It won't affect your evaluation or your appraisal. Because like in my case, I get to touch base with the manager every 6 months or quarterly. So basically that evaluation or that appraisal is kind of like thinking, seeing what's my progress at the moment or what will be my goal in the next few months or in the next year. Stuff like that. So basically it won't really affect you unless, you know, you did something that's, you know, outside what the policy says or what the guidelines says, then that could be punitive. But if, you know, it's just basically that's part of the process here. You know, your manager will get to talk with you, evaluate you, and see whether what kind of help you may probably be needing. Or if you're excelling too much, then you'll be given, you know, additional work. Like you'll get
You get to protect
someone. you get to be a charge nurse. So those kind of things. So it's not a scary stuff talking to managers here. Because back home, if you're called in the manager's office, that could be, you know, something else. But here, if you get called by your manager, it's either you'll be given a gift card, you'll be given some treats or some recognition. So it's not really entirely punitive.
Yeah.
No, it's not. And the only thing, speaking of appraisal, the other thing that we like is if you have improved your education, like if you get certificates, did you get your rehab certificate? Did you get your infection control certificate? Those things will help you get a good appraisal, by the way, in our organization. So.
Okay, so thank you for that question. We have a comment here from Quinny who says, our employer floor manager gave us 3 months orientation preceptorship. If you're ready, it might be shortened. If not, you can request to extend a few weeks. So Quinny is just confirming with what Lanny and John has said.
I worked with Quinny in the same hospital.
Ah, there you go. So, this is an interesting question. Elmo is asking, would it be more challenging to transition in the U.S. now given the COVID situation? What would you say? That's an interesting question. Thank you for that question, Elmo.
I didn't get what you just asked, Tanya, sorry.
Oh, so Elmo asked, would it be more challenging to transition in the U.S. now given the COVID situation?
So, okay, in the nursing home right now, it's a little bit challenging because of the staffing shortages. If you came here without proper training, it will be challenging. It would be a challenge. But I can share you something. We do have a Filipino nurse who came in here that was February. And then we got the pandemic late March. It was a little bit challenged, but she made it. What she did is like what I said, you just have to speak up that you are not comfortable in doing something. She extended her training because of that, what's going on. But basically, yes, it's a little bit challenged, but it's rewarding. You will get a lot of job offer, but the training that you will get will be a little bit different, I would say.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, I just love what you just said earlier, Tanya, that the best time to come to the US is now. So yeah, with or without COVID, you know, people are coming still here in the US. You know, it's still business as usual.
Yeah.
So people are getting hired in different companies, especially in the hospital, like what Lanny said. There are like tons of opportunities here for nurses and other, you know, medical professionals because of the whole COVID stuff. So I think what's challenging here is, you know, there will be some backlog in terms of the processing of papers, especially when you get here. But once you set foot here, it's just easy because you get a job, because it's the primary reason why, you know, people wants to come here. And then once you're in, like in the hospital where I'm working with right now, I've met few people who just arrived a few months ago. So they were on training, but currently they were asked to do something else to help out with the COVID situation. So it's kind of like asking beyond on what's your job description says, but mm-hmm. it's still a job. You still get paid with that. So I believe that, you know, no matter what job they offer, as long as it's decent and you get paid based on what's stipulated mm-hmm. in your contract, I don't think that's a bad deal. So, you know, in terms of job, nursing practice, you know, everything here is still business as usual. But with other, you know, institutions where, you know, your papers will get processed, probably there will be some challenges with that. Because I know some people who doesn't have their social security number yet. They don't have their green card yet because there were some, I think there were some constraints with their schedule, but they're working on expediting everything for them to have those papers ready. But I think other than that, you know, everything here in the US is still the same.
Yeah, and I think around this time they have waivers. Like, for example, for the nurses and the CNAs, that they can practice even if they don't have a certain document.
Yeah.
Some states, at least in our state, yeah.
Correct, Lanny. There are some states that will have emergency license that you can process. And that's where it's really important to be with an agency that can help you with that process, because it can feel very confusing and a little bit overwhelming,
right.
You know, when things are delayed, like Social Security or getting a license endorsement or emergency license. So it's important to, you know, to be able to confer with your agency about that. We have a question here from JR. Hi, JR. I know JR. Well, 3 months, good to know that. How was the setup? You handle patient while you have a senior nurse accompanying you. I think JR is asking about, like, how does it work? Do you have like a senior nurse who's working with you, like a preceptor?
Tanya, I didn't get that again. Sorry.
Oh, goodness. Lanny, can you hear me?
So yes, JR, I can hear you.
So JR says, wow, 3 months. Good to know that. How was the setup? You handle patient while you have a senior nurse accompanying you?
Okay, so in my setup, in a rehab facility or in a nursing home, it's a little bit different. Once you are done with your training, you are you don't have any senior now. What you do, we do have supervisors or managers that are working with you on the floor that you can ask questions. Basically, you are on your own, but you can ask questions. You can ask questions with your with the other nurses that you work with, or your managers or your director of nursing. It depends. It depends. I think it depends on the organization that you work with.
Okay. And Quinny is confirming as well. You'll have a preceptor who will guide you on your bedside skills and charting. Lenny, there's a question for you. What is the usual ratio of nurse to patient in a rehab?
Okay, so the in law or according to the legalities is like it depends on the shift, like first shift, second shift, third shift. So first shift, you need to have like a one caregiver or one nursing staff for 15 patients, but that includes your CNAs. So in the facility that I work right now is basically one nurse to 24 patients, one to 21, one to 32, but you will have aides, like 2 to 3 aides that you work with. That's
how it's set up.
Yes, that's a ratio. Yeah, that's the setup. But legality-wise, one is to 15, one for first shift. One caregiver to 15 patients, but that one caregiver includes your CNA. It could be a CNA, it could be a nurse.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. Alyssa is asking, I'm currently residing in Oklahoma, but I want to take my intakes in New York because it's less hassle than in Dorset. Would it be okay to do it and in Dorset later, or it's better to just take the NCLEX here in Oklahoma, regardless it's hard in terms of requirements? Alyssa, you're welcome to contact me and I can give you the answer to that. Many nurses obviously know that there are a lot of states that require Social Security to take the NCLEX. So we do have a list of that states that don't require that. And New York obviously is one of them. So that might be an option. And then we can, you know, help you with an endorsement.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. If you know a friend or colleague who would benefit from listening to this conversation, please let them know about the show. We want to help as many nurses as we can turn their dreams into a reality. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kineticsusa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com.
Nelia is asking, Ms. Tanya, may I ask, hi, John and Lenny, what is the fastest way to get NCLEX? I'm in California now, but the Board of Nursing requires me to take the RN program. I'm looking for another state to apply. So, Nelia, you're welcome to contact me, and I'd be happy to share that with you as well. Cams is asking, how much is the cost and time you need to get a driving license in the US? Is it advisable to get international driving license before you go to the US? What would you say to CAMS?
Okay. I do. They can do that one, the international drive, but I think it has, I'm not so sure, but it has a period of time that you can do you can use your international driving. But I would suggest to really learn driving there before coming here. When I came here, I had somebody who taught me to drive, but I did not have to go to school for that. But I do also, I think it would be a good idea to start reading with the signs, the regulations here in the United States for you guys to be able to do it yourself when you come here. It doesn't take a lot of time to learn. I think it's just your motivation to learn. And take your driving license tests. But it's really important.
Yeah, very important. John, what about you? Yeah. How did it work with the driving license?
Well, I was going through all these questions here. I want to thank Queenie for answering those questions for me because she works with me in the same hospital room I'm working at right now. So, yeah, what my wife and I did with regards to our driver's licenses, before coming here, we applied for an international driver's license so that we can legally drive here while we don't have one. So I think in our state, you're allowed to drive with your international driver's license for 6 months. And then after that, you have to get the state license. So what my wife and I did, we rented a car and then we reviewed some paperwork on how we're going to get by with the written exam and the practical as well. So everything, we did it on the same day. So whether the question is, will it cost us, did it cost us too much time? The answer is no. So basically, we just finish everything in a day. Money, it's not that expensive as compared to other countries like in the Middle East. I have some friends who spend like $1,000 just to get their driver's license. But here, I don't think it will cost you that much. And then, yeah, and after that, you can just, you know, get your own car after you get your driver's license. It's the process here is pretty efficient and fast. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's just you just have to allot a time for you to fix or facilitate everything in terms of, you know, getting your driver's license.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, and the one thing just to mention is sometimes it can be different in different states. So that's important to be able to research the state that you're going to be going to. Alyssa is actually commenting as well on the driving and says, it depends, but now that everything is done via appointment, it could take 2 months to get scheduled for written test. I'm not sure, Alyssa, where you are based. I think you said Oklahoma. But the tests and the cost depend on the driving school you want to go to. International licenses may work, but check with the DMV where you're residing. My JPDL wasn't converted. Okay, thank you for that, Alyssa. Genevieve is asking, I have a visa screen already.
Tanya.
Yeah, John?
I'm sorry, if I may add with the driver's license.
Yes.
I think the state that we're in right now, they will not really require you to be in a driving school before you, you know, before you apply for a driver's license. Because I have a friend, she's a fairly new driver, but basically she knows how to drive. She knows her road orientation. So my wife and I help her, you know, when it comes to their practical test, preparation for her practical test. With the written exam, I think she already passed it. So I think one thing that if you want to get by with your getting your driver's license, you know, feel free to connect with someone who knows the road there. You know, where do they do their driving tests? Because at least they can give you, you know, some idea on how they run things there. At least when you do your practical test, at least you already have an idea on how things work. So instead of paying, I think some people here, they ask for $50 an hour for them to teach you. But if you have, like, you know, if you build a relationship or, like, you know, you build trust with someone that who can help you with that, I think it will help you a lot in getting your driver's license, because I feel like there's a lot of people there who's willing to help. It's just that they need to be tapped in order for them to, you know, to help someone. You know, you need to ask first before someone helps you out. Mm.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with John. Also, and I know just something. I know maybe there are somebody out there that who knows how to drive already. But just like what Jen said, road orientation, because I know someone who has a car in back home, knows how to drive. But when she came here to the United States, she did not make the test. It's because the way we drive in Philippines is totally different here. So do not take that trick when you are driving here. And especially when you're doing your tests.
Yeah, exactly. And I can tell you from my personal experience, I came to America 20 years ago. And in the beginning, I'm in California. I drove on an international license. I was very positive coming here. I really, you know, it was stressful in the beginning, but, you know, not really too bad for me. My husband hated it, but in the beginning, and he loves it now, but that's a whole nother story. But in terms of the driving license, it was the one thing that I was petrified of. I was so scared to take my driving license, and I've driven for 20 years in America, in South Africa. So, you know, it can be very intimidating. I remember the day that I got my license. I think it was like the happiest day ever. I felt it was the biggest accomplishment. So, you know, to anybody who's scared like I was, just you have to push yourself and go for it.
Yeah.
Like John and Lanny have said, just ask for, you know, tap other people for help, because people will help you.
Yeah.
You have to ask.
And if you did not make it at the first time, you will do it in the second time.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. Nobody's ever going to answer.
No. It doesn't make it. I did not pass.
You pass NCLEX, you'll definitely pass your driving test.
Yeah.
No, I failed my first driving test because I did not know how to.
That's one thing for
sure. I did not know how to parallel parking. That's the only thing.
Oh, really?
But the second time I did it, I made it.
Well, I'm so grateful in California we didn't have to do parallel parking because I don't know if I would have passed.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, we have a lot of questions, but I'm going to have one more from the chat and then I'm going to ask you about the states that you're living in. So the last one from the chat is from Genevieve, who's asking, I have a visa screen and priority date already. Can I apply to your agency? And if I'm working at a clinic, but with previous acute care experience in tertiary hospital? The answer, Genevieve, is yes. There are many organizations all over the US that look at for different kinds of experience. So even if you are not currently working in an acute care hospital, there are different opportunities for you, and you know we'd love you to apply.
Yeah. Okay. And sorry, I want to add to that one. It's not necessarily that you need to have. I mean, it depends on where you are applying, I guess. But you don't need to have this. Some company organization would hire someone who doesn't have experience, also. So
yeah,
just to let you know.
Okay, good. Well, we've got so many questions. So I will go into the chat afterwards, and Lanny and John will also go into the chat and see if we can answer some of the other questions that are coming up. Thank you, everybody, for asking the questions, because really, this is just a chat. You know, the Lafora Talk Show is really just an informal chat. It's for us to share, to learn from each other. And I just love how everybody's asking questions and it's conversational, because that's really what it is. It's just here to help. That's all we want to do. Okay, so I'm going to talk now a little bit. We're almost at the hour, and I was so involved in our conversation that I didn't realize the time. So, tell us, Lanny and John, we're going to talk about the states now. So this is a new segment that we've implemented in the Lafora Talk Show. We started it last Lafora Talk Show in December, and we do it at the end because we have to save up to people to know which state you're going to be in. So if you want to each tell us a little bit about the state that you're in, and tell us about why you like that state, or what you don't like about that state, if there is something. I mean, this is a place to be honest, and this is our safe place to chat. If you can tell us about the cost of living, the taxes, the weather, you know, if you need a car where you live, because there's some places where you can get by with public transportation. Okay, that would be great. Over to you, Lanny.
So I live in Michigan. I love it here. I know I could have another opportunity from other places, but I choose to stay here. The only thing that I do not like here is the winter time. I dislike driving in the snow. Who does? But I love it here. The people here are very nice. In the area that I am with, we don't have a lot of high rate crimes. We do have crimes, but not as bad as other cities. So in Michigan, most of the people think that a Motor City, Ford, Chrysler, GM, mostly in Detroit. But Michigan it's a huge state. We have Upper Peninsula and Lower Peninsula. We are the state that connected to four Great Lakes. We have Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, Lake Erie. I think it's only one lake that is not connected to us, the Great Lakes, the Lake Ontario. Our cost of living here is not as bad as other facility. In fact, other states, rather. We are on the top 10 of the cheapest state. Michigan is number 7. For property taxes per year, average is $2,145 a year. It depends also on, we do have city tax, but it depends on the city that you are in. Grand Rapids, where I live, I have to pay about 2.4% city tax, and the state tax is about 4.25%. Average cost of housing, it's probably around $130,000 or to $150,000. Of course, it depends on the city and it depends on the kind of house you're getting, but roughly about that amount. So I think we have a lot of national forests here. We have a lot of festivals. Actually, every year in October, we have art festivals in Grand Rapids. We have red flannel festivals. We have we have all of those things around. I love the people here. They are very nice, polite. Michigan is a mix of Democrats and Republican, so it's balanced. I think that's all about Michigan that I could share. Fall, spring are very awesome, pictured rock places, different colors, these kind of things.
Okay, that gives us a really good idea and description of Michigan and Grand Rapids, Lenny. What about you, John? Tell us about where you are. You've mentioned it already. Anyone was listening.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm happy to represent the state of Missouri. So okay. I am specifically in Springfield. So it's the third largest city here in Missouri. So they have like four cities. Its capital is Jefferson City, Kansas City, St. Louis and Springfield. So Springfield is in southwest part of Missouri. So we have four seasons here. So we have spring, summer, fall, and winter, like what Lenny said. So basically, we have to endure that when I think we get to have some snow here starting every January to February. And then it will start to somehow dissipate by tail end of March. And then you get to have like some good amount of sun again. We have a lot of parks here, a lot of attractions as well. So we have caverns, we have lakes, Lake of the Ozarks, if you guys are familiar with that. It's just like an hour or two drive away from our place. And then going to big cities like St. Louis, where you get to see Gateway of Art. It's 4 hours drive from my place. And then if you're wanting to have some Jollibee, Chicago is like 8 hours drive, eight drives away.
Oh, it's 2 hours from me.
Oh, well, then, yeah. It's 8 hours drive, 8 hours drives from here. And then from Dallas, I think it's same amount of ours as well. In terms of like safety, I think safe word is somewhat relative. So here, the property related crimes are pretty high, but in terms of other stuff, I think it's fairly safe here, if I may say. And the funny thing here is when my wife and I were trying to move out from our current from our previous place, we were like checking in Google whether what safest place to live in Springfield. And then what's funny is you get to see all those people who has criminal records. They just live in one place, and then you get to have daily updates of those people who just got their mugshots taken the night before. Mm-hmm. So based, yeah. I don't know whether you have that as well in Michigan. So at least, you know, you get to see, you know, those people that you need to avoid chatting with or, you know, having interaction with for you to be safe, if I may say. So, and then in terms of cost of living, based on my research, the cost of living here is 12% below than the national average. So basically, it's a pretty good place to live in. Well, if you have low cost of living, it also follows that you have low hourly salary as well, if I may say. So basically, it just goes hand in hand. But the thing, what we love here in Springfield, it's not highly urbanized as compared to other city or state that we've visited in the past. So we get to have this life-work balance. We get to have some amount of entertainment when we go to Branson. So they said that Branson is the Vegas of Midwest. So because some of the artists there from Vegas who just retired, they eventually moved to Branson to continue their business. So we get to have a little dose of that here. So it's in terms of like how far is that place from our place, it's a 45-minute drive, and you get to have a lot of outlet stores where you can have good deals. Everything, you know, sky's the limit from apparels, bags, shoes, clothing. You get to have good deals there. In terms of outdoor activities, we have lakes. You can do fishing there, but make sure when you do fishing, make sure that you have a permit or license to do that, because I almost got caught when I was doing that. Good thing it's pandemic.
Oh my goodness.
So there's like, yeah, if you're fishing in a state park, they require you to have a license to do that. So basically, you can just get that from Walmart. It's $12 a year. Mm-hmm. So if you're fishing for an ordinary fish, that's just $12. But if you're looking for a trout, a sea bass fish, I think it's much higher. I think it's $15 per year. So so you better be aware of those kind of things. And then if you love biking, there are a lot of trails here as well that you get to see down here in Springfield and even in Branson area as well. Lakes are pretty great here during summer. I think we've been in the news because during the pandemic, there were like a lot of people who are not wearing their masks during that period. They were like, you know, spending time in the lake. So yeah, and then in terms of activities, yeah, there are a lot of things to do here. You'll not get bored. But if you run out of activities here, like, you know, those neighboring states are just nearby that can easily be, you can always drive there. In terms of like schooling, I have a four-year-old boy right now, so I'm sending him to a daycare. So my wife and I, we usually take turns in taking care of him. My wife works weekends, and I work weekdays. So at least, you know, we have that time with our son. So the school system here, based on their records, they have a pretty good standard of education system here. So when you start bringing your kids here in public school, they basically provide everything, all their supplies, even food, they provide it as well. What else can I say? So there are some people who are moving out of Missouri because they have family members or relatives in other state. But based on my opinion, Springfield is a pretty decent place. It's a great place to live and raise a family.
Sorry, go ahead, Lenny.
Tanya, it just came into my mind, and I forget it a while ago, but is it okay to add something a little bit from what we talk about budgeting? Because I forgot to remind them that when they come in here, because this is the one thing that I regret, savings. Okay. And when you come here, ask your employer about your 401k, do they match it? Do they offer HSA? And it's not good. I would like also for them to explore about Roth IRA, different kind of savings, because that's the main thing. If I did not know about those things when I started here, I only learned about it 3 years or 4 years after. And if I have started putting savings around that time, it could have been accumulated into something different or like a huge amount of savings by now. Yeah. So yes, they need that. That is really important.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Lenny, because I can relate. I had the same experience. And it's sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't even know what you are.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Just to add into that one.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. Thank you for that. It's so interesting when we talk about the different places, Grand Rapids and Springfield. I've been to Springfield, as you know, many times. Every place is just so different. People don't realize how different it is right. in the different parts of the world. And you know, every place has got their good things and maybe some things that aren't as good. But I think really, really important to share information so that people can educate themselves. And that can really make a huge difference to being able to adapt smoothly to coming to the US. Okay, we are way over time, but I wanted to thank Lanny and John so much. This was so informative. I loved speaking to you. It was really fun. It was a great conversation. I think we all learned so much from you. And I want to thank again the LaFora admin team for giving us this opportunity. I think it's so important for people to educate themselves. There was a question about coming to the U.S. in the pandemic. Yes, this is a great time to come to the U.S., but at the same time, it can be even more stressful because a lot of healthcare organizations don't have the time or bandwidth to help you as much. So, you know, really important to educate yourself so that hopefully it can be as smooth as possible when you finally are living your American dream, which is what we want for everybody who's watching.
If you enjoyed today's episode, then please help us by hitting the follow button on your podcast player and leaving us a review. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kineticsusa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com. Tune in next time for more incredible conversations.